You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Where the sidewalk ends and the road begins, we said goodbye on a cold, dark night. I'm not afraid to go. You bet I'm not. Where the sidewalk. Come back.
9:17. We're late for this segment, so I need to apologize up front to the guy from Montana who you've heard a lot about, Rob Schwarz. Rob, apologies for being late. How are you?
No, it's good. I'm good, Mac.
All right. And then Kurt Knowles. He is the official F-18 explainer, and he joins us as well from Southern California. So you've heard him possibly introduced as Rudy at times, but that's his. His parents gave him the name Kurt, so we'll talk to him like that. So, Kurt, first of all, how you doing? What's up?
Matt, can you hear me loud and clear?
What are you going to do, a comm check? Of course, man. Where are you? What are you doing?
Well, I'm doing a little work today, but I'm hooking and jabbing. But I got it. Let me put you on hold real quick. I'll be right back.
What? who the hell comes on a radio show and says, let me put you on hold? Yeah. See, that's how you know you're a battle buddy, when you could do crazy shit like that. Okay, first of all, we need the Montana report. What's the, I checked the weather up in North Dakota. It's going to be balmy there, for God's sakes. What about Montana?
No, it's the same. It's like spring runoff. I mean, it's pretty swampy up here right now with all the snow coming off.
So, do you guys need that? Have you had a lot of snow? Talk to me.
Yeah, we've had, I don't know how much total. We probably had a good 4 foot accumulated at one point. And God, it's been mid-50s. I swear it touched 60 yesterday. So that's all coming apart right now, and it's
wow.
Making it a little messy. And then, of course, it freezes at night, so everything turns into an ice rink, and just waiting to blow a knee out walking around the shop.
That's not a bad thing, freezing, because it slows the movement down to the rivers, and the rivers need to digest some of that stuff.
Yeah, especially because the topsoil's still frozen, so it's not going to accept any of that runoff. And geez, the creek's up pretty good right now.
This is all. If you don't live in the northern tier or in snow country, you're not savvy to this kind of discussion. So you're getting smart right now. All of this for free. Any other Montana news that we need to know about?
No, it's pretty nice to be able to get around a little bit. It's tough because drifts are still around, so snow machine doesn't work because there's a bunch of bare ground, and then you get to a big old drift, and you need a snow machine, so it's a little bit sketchy, but it's nice to kind of get a taste of spring. It's going to turn back to winter, I think, next week.
Really? Because
we can chase a few mountain lions, I think, maybe Thursday next week if we get a decent snow.
Nice, we love that. So, talk to me about mountain lions. Don't they do they hibernate? Why is it? And what are the rules on mountain lions? On shooting mountain lions?
Can you do it? First, they don't hibernate. This is their prime time season for killing because late winter deer and elk are kind of run down and easy prey. So, mountain lions and wolves are. They're making hay right now. And the season here is, God, I think it ends in April, but there's a quota. So you can only kill in certain areas so many female cats and then so many cats overall. And we have not met the quota in our area yet. But we'll chase them for sport and tree them, take pictures, send them on the merry way most of the time. Unless we've got a big tom around here that's really wreaking havoc on the deer.
So you're really preserving the sanctuary, and if you don't have to harvest, then you don't harvest.
Exactly. We chased.
Wait, hold on. You were in timeout, so you put a cork in it for a second. The only person that says exactly on this program is me. Okay. It's one of the few rules I have. Otherwise, it's pretty much open season, but exactly belongs to me. Be very careful, okay? Just so you know, Rob.
What about clown?
Clown is universal. You know that. And that, everybody knows. You get called a clown.
That's not a good thing.
No, you've been judged. You have been judged.
Which happens often on the show.
Exactly. You know what's interesting is for much of the country, the big city part of the nation doesn't understand the responsibility that outdoors guys feel relative to hunting and being a hunter. It's pretty interesting the responsibility that most hunters feel to be good stewards of the game that they hunt, the environment they hunt into, and you do read stories about people that abuse it, but I will tell you, 90% of the people that go out there are very conscientious. Rob, your thoughts about that?
Yeah, and just the financial piece of it. I mean, if you look at the numbers of what hunters put into conservation of both the game they hunt and the ground that they're hunting on, the numbers are huge on how much money they spend. I mean, I spent because I'm still an Idaho resident, I'm paying non-resident fees for tags. I think I spent $2,000 last year in Montana just on tags to have the opportunity to hunt. And those tags were for deer, elk, bear, turkey. Fishing license was in there, and I only harvested an elk. I didn't even use those tags, so I, you know, basically burned $700-$800 of tags that I didn't fill that I could have.
Isn't disabled veterans get a discount? Do you get any discount for disabled veterans?
In Montana, as a non-resident, no. In Idaho, for all those same tags plus wolf, what else did I have? And my trapping license, I think I spent like $96. I mean, it's insane for, you know, if you have more than 40% disability, the break that they give their residents in Idaho, and they do it in Montana too for residents, but most of that fish and game money is made to run that state program from out-of-state tags. So it kind of pays. I should be switching my residency this year just because I'm doing most of my hunting here in Montana. I just haven't got around to it yet.
All right. So let's check in with Rudy. Other than that, Rob, anything crazy going on in your life?
No, trying to figure out I've been dealing with the VA a little bit lately, so frustration level is increased a fair amount.
Are you appropriately medicated, or are you not medicated?
No, not medicated. Well, heartburn medicine.
Heartburn, that's it. That's it?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Then just dealing with that, trying to get an appointment to see a gastro, whatever they call, when they tube you from the top just to make sure you haven't damaged anything in your stomach. I think I'm on week two of this process, and I still haven't got an appointment scheduled, so it's getting a little frustrating.
Okay. So this is for you. So just relax, and it's Friday, so we're being happy.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Rudy, what about you? What do you got going?
Well, actually, it's funny. Rob's saying I had to reach out to the VA not too long ago, so something for the show. But I had to go through the process of resubmitting after they came back and gave me my rating, they missed something that was pretty significant. And I was actually surprised. I went back and I had all the documentation. I went back to the VA and they're like, oh, no, you absolutely need to put back in for this. So
okay, let me just give a detail.
Go ahead.
It has to do with a blown out knee. Okay, so just so people know what people deal with, it's not like a small mole in his underarm that was covered up by like all the hair that he's got in his. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a blown out knee. Okay, so it's the kind of shit that people deal with. Anyway, sorry.
Easy, Magno. You're right. It's exactly. It was like
Hold on.
Yeah.
I got to do this for myself. Okay, I'm good. All right.
This is the breeze easy when you're talking about the VA music.
Yeah, you have to, man, because it pisses you off. Because you hear these stories all the time, and then you hear, no, you know, everybody's trying hard in the VA, and I get it. And it's like, okay, I do, yeah, you know, but Rob's waiting 2 weeks.
Yeah, they did. Right? You're right. They missed my literally blown out knee, like literally fully torn ACL, partially torn MCL. They missed the entire thing. So that's all been resubmitted now, and you guys probably have this too, where you go on the VA's website and you see what's going on with the process. Well, they, no kidding, they said expect, it tells you like when they expect to come back to you with their findings, August. So we've got about 6 months. Now, you know, you look at it from a positive aperture of, well, at least you'll get back pay if they do find it that's justified,
yeah.
But. You know, still,
no, that's the system. And let me just tell you, I'm sure there's probably veterans listening, Vietnam guys and whatnot, that are saying, August? Wow, how'd you get to the front of the line?
Well, I went, you know, the San Diego VA place. I mean, they help you out, then they give you the website, and you just kind of start tracking it, and they're saying August for when they're going to come back. So that would be, you know, if I came in, that was in January, so call it 8 months for them to decide and. Basically, make a determination if it's justified. So, and then they'll back pay whatever additional disability rating that they assess and you know come up with. So, we'll see how that work comes out. I'll keep you posted. But yeah, no, you're right. It was just kind of one of those things. It wasn't something small. I was like, how did they? All the other things they you know looked at. It's funny how they have their. It's, you know, I'm looking to open this business, right? And right now I'm in a process of dealing with the city. And so I'm looking at this commercial real estate site, and it's funny how the city, how government agencies look at things in specific ways. For the city, that's all about what's going to get them complaints and what's going to get them sued, right? So like the highest priority things for them is parking, because they don't want anybody that's going to your business to be parking on the street, because that's going to get them complaints. Once people are inside, the things they're looking at is, which I agree with, where's how many exits do you have? You can't just have one exit in, one exit out. You have to have multiple exits so that in case there's an emergency or a fire. They're big on water fountains for dehydration / and then they're big on obviously the appropriate bathroom facilities. So it's funny how it's like what's going to get them complaints and what's going to get them sued. With the government and what I'm dealing with here with the VA, it's just kind of funny that when they were assessed me, they've got their, okay, you know, tingling in the hands, hearing loss. It's kind of like the things that they're like spring loaded already to quick determinations. Okay, you get this, 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 and this. But to miss something so obvious as you're driving down the road with a flat tire, as you're blown out knee,
right.
kind of wild. So, yeah, kind of wild.
There you go. That's the, all right, let's talk about, hold on, let me read you an email. Hey, Mac, listening to your friends, try to be nice to them today, too, by the way. Like, look, my friends don't need you guys to hop on and protect them. Do you guys believe that the VA ought to be privatized? I've heard Mac's opinion. I'm curious about your friends. So, boys, do you think that the VA ought to be privatized? Rob?
I think there's parts of it that should.
Which part?
I agree with points you've made as far as there should be specific aspects that the VA is responsible for, you know, whether it's physical therapy, those type of things, prosthetics, you know, dealing with heartburn, is not one of them. We don't need those type of guys. We don't need a whole department in the VA to do that kind of thing. So I think that should be privatized, that portion of it. And like you had said, kind of like TRICARE, you know, you have your VA card and you should just be able to go to a hospital and say, hey, I need to see, you know, make an appointment and see a gastroenterologist. And that's it. It should be over at that with make it that easy instead of what I'm dealing with is go to the local VA. They say, hey, yeah, you need to see a specialist. And, yeah, you're more than 40 miles or whatever it is, so you're part of the choice program. So you've got to call those folks and get them to bless it. Then they'll tell someone who makes an appointment to call you and the hospital and make an appointment for you. It shouldn't be that dang hard.
You know, it was interesting. One of the things in watching the confirmation hearings that I played was I'm trying to think. It was in the VA secretary's confirmation hearing. Senators were asking him about the choice program, and he said, look, what it was designed to do was facilitate local treatment. What it did was put another layer of bureaucracy and make it increasingly more difficult for veterans to get care. So,
well, and then on top of that, not every physician, like you may want to go see a certain specialist, they may not participate. And
right.
Talking to the nurse practitioner at the VA in Salmon, Idaho, she said, and a lot of them don't participate because they're not getting paid. You know, they're getting a bunch of friction. It takes too damn long for the government to get them paid, so they're not participating. So now you've got less options out there for care.
You know, again, it's so frustrating. That's why people talk about that. So
can we get off the VA because we're starting to get – it's Friday, man. You're just going to get the blood level.
Am I?
The music side.
Do your breathing exercise, okay? No, it was interesting. It was interesting just to watch these centers talk about the things that they were trying to do to make it better that ultimately made it worse. And what you had is this other layer of bureaucracy turning people away constantly. I'm sorry, no. I'm sorry, no. And then it coming back to the VA and obviously not wired together very well. My guests this morning are Rob Schwartz from Montana and Kurt Knowles from Southern California. We're talking about whatever we talk about. All right, what else is going on? National politics. Let's talk about that because you guys both have.
Hey, before we get into that, I got something that's so cool. You guys got to hear this.
All right.
So I'm at Brock's football practice last night, right? My son's football practice, and Steve Seeker is there, who was on your show last week. And he starts telling me, he's no kidding, like fresh out of SOI, gets shipped over to the UK to check in for like barracks duty in the UK. And this is like, you know, almost 30 years ago. He said he's like, and now this guy, if you put it in perspective, the guy's probably throw a dartboard, like 5'10", 5'11", probably about 190 pounds of like, the guy's chiseled, right? He's in good shape. The guy's a big CrossFit guy. He says he had the standard, like, you know, birth control devices on, the big huge glasses, black, with the black frames. They weighed about 140 pounds soaking wet. And he says he goes walking into the barracks to check in, and he says, who's standing there but Corporal Mike Musselman? The gunner as a corporal. And he said he was like, what the fuck are you doing here?
Hey, by the way, Gunner said he was a sergeant. Goes, I wasn't a corporal.
Oh.
I was a sergeant. I'm like, all right, whatever. Whatever.
I just think it's so funny that what a small world, man.
Isn't it?
So he starts telling these stories about, you know, Mike, and he's like, yeah, we had all this extra money because they didn't have a chow hall. So he goes, what's Mike about to do? He bought like this IROC. Can't you see him on Gutter as a young guy driving around an IROC? You know, it's just so funny.
In England and Scotland,
yeah,
he's rolling around. Large, large and in charge.
In his IROC.
In his IROC. So
1990 IROC. Oh man, I thought this was awesome.
It was.
So what a small world, though, man. Yeah, and that guy, Steve. What a story. You know, I know you had him on a couple times, but just what a great guy, and just, you know, really tied in. Hopefully, you can help out some Marines and getting some guidance on transitioning and that kind of stuff. So
you know what,
really,
it's really cool good. To have on. everybody finds their own way, but, you know, guys who do it messier, you know, you think you know what you're doing and you do your best. And I love having guys who aren't, you know, it's not pretty the way they do
it. Yeah, they kind of stumble, then they recover, and they stumble again, they recover, and then now it's like then they're standing there looking back on it and go, I'm kind of glad I stumbled, because if I hadn't stumbled, I don't know if I would have found my true way, you know what I mean? And now the guy's, you know, got a big smile on his face, and he's happy, you know, it was cool.
No, it's very, very interesting. His story, and again, he is now a technical advisor on the USA Network show Shooter. He was a scout sniper in the Marine Corps, and he crosses paths with the guy who ultimately gives him that job, because they both have in common an affection for Stoic philosophy. Yeah, like what?
Yeah.
He said that. I was like, wait, you're a Marine? Like, well, what are you talking about? But it's funny. It's funny.
Yeah.
That would in fact be the case, and it is.
Well, so we got to do some wire touching with him and Rob, because he's tied in with some guys that have worked some, you know, special forces type things that have got some ranches up in Montana. They're taking guys that, you know, whether it's a child from a service member who was killed in action, or you know, somebody with PTSD, or somebody that's, you know, got some disabilities, and they're taking them up there to these ranches, and they're letting them hunt and fish and, you know, sit around. He said the story is telling about how they're bringing these children up that, you know, that they're, let's say their father was killed in action, you know, and they're bringing them up with his battle buddies. And he says that, imagine this, you're sitting around a campfire, And the kid's never heard these stories, and he's hearing stories about his dad, and what he did in combat, and, you know, here's some things that he, you know, how he affected the guys sitting around the campfire. I mean, what an experience, you know what I mean, for a kid to hear to talk about his father with his battle buddies. I mean, this is awesome.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Yeah. And those stories that only that group of guys can tell.
Only those guys know.
Right.
Yep.
Right. Yep. No, you know, one of the cool things is, I know that Rob pinged me during the segment, but when we had those guys from Boulder Crest Retreat on, and the work they're doing, and the fact that they want to start mobile training teams, and they want to multiply that. So programs, non-traditional means of PT, treating PTS, and in their opinion, it should be the first thing that guys do, which is unmedicated. You know, look, guys in World War II had that experience. They came home, and they built an incredible world that the rest of us still live in today. All right? If those fucking guys can do it, then guess what? We can do it too. So it's not a disabling experience. It ought to enable us to hopefully make sense of it in some way, shape, or form, live with that we can't make sense with, and go on and do great things, because our nation needs us, and to be honest with you, the world needs us just as much as when we were on active duty, arguably maybe more in these other facets of our life, because our culture needs what we have. And so that's what that program's all about. I know Rob pinged me in the middle of it, but I think it's something that's important to all of us, and something we know Marines and veterans want, which is, I don't want to be medicated, man. I don't like that. I want somebody to help me deal with it. And I'd just be curious your thoughts. When somebody puts it, and I remember hearing General Mattis, I heard the term post-traumatic growth for the first time from him. And when he said it, I was like, what did he just say? What is that? And so when you hear that, and you hear that it's an unmedicated program, it's done by getting guys together and talking about these issues. But when you hear you hear somebody say, hey, look, we need you. We need what you guys have. How powerful is that to know that the nation still needs our experience, the life that we've lived, our perspective? Rob, your thoughts?
Yeah, first off, I did just got an email back from Josh yesterday, I believe. They're still trying to get their logistics in line for that mobile training team. It sounds like we're going to eventually get some guys to come up and do some deer hunts here. So we're looking forward to that. But on the Country Needs You piece. It was interesting. A couple of years ago, I was horseshoeing for a therapeutic riding center, and they wanted to start a veterans program. So they came to me and talked about, you know, how should we start it and get, you know, access these guys to get them in. And they, you know, they kind of went at it as, you know, we're giving a handout. You know, and I said, you know, these type of people are not going to accept handout, and that's not going to be attractive to them at all. And there's different aspects to this program. One, you know, they can come and ride. Two, they can come and help some of the kids that are in the program. And I said, that's where you're going to get the guys you want to target out here, because they don't want a handout.
Right.
They want, if you tell them, hey, with your experience, your leadership, your problem solving, everything you've learned as a being in the military, we need you to help us. I said, there's your advertisement. That's how you're going to get guys into this program, because they don't want a handout. If you come to me and say, hey, we want to give you something free, I'm going to be like, you know, I don't need it. Give it to somebody else who does.
Right.
But if you come to me and say, hey, we've got this group of kids that needs a guy with your experience to help them, immediately I'm going to go, well, I'm in. So yeah, I think that I liked Josh's program, Ken right. Falk, and him, and that's kind of why I reached out to him. It was the no medication piece. It was the, you know, this country needs you. And your experience, come out of your hole and get back in the fight type of program that attracted me to that.
Right, right. No. Rudy, your thoughts?
Well, the one thing that I'll say about you had somebody on the show earlier this week, and there's a big component that I think of just having that feeling that you've got support from your brothers to your left and your right. And when he was talking about one of the people you guess you had on was talking about this significant lower number of PTSD issues with POWs. And he was saying, you know, essentially that.
How crazy was that?
That
was Josh.
And to say that, you know, that these guys have, you know, without a doubt, probably went through the most excruciating and painful mental challenges of combat being a POW, and they're the ones that are, you know, what they're finding statistically have the lowest number of PTSD claims and issues. It's no doubt it's because they feel like they have self-worth and they have support from their brothers from their left and their right. And I know it sounds a little bit cheesy, but it's like, you know, we've kind of got this group text thing going on between like five or six of us. And to be honest with you, it's a small highlight for me, because it's like you just kind of chit chat and you just got this kind of camaraderie going on that you don't feel alone, and you feel like you got some brothers that, like you talk about, Mac, is people want to know. I have people like, well, what's it like over there, and what's this and what's that, and you start kind of telling the stories and stuff about how they, you know, Taliban shoots little kids, and you know the little girls aren't valued, so they'll shoot a little girl to hope that we medevac them so we can bring in a helicopter. So now they've got bait for the helicopter, and they're looking at you like, either they're kind of getting at you like, what, really, and or like, you're full of shit, you know what I mean? And you're like, you kind of start realizing you're starting to open up maybe a chapter that's they're not really you know, in the mindset to handle. That it's not, it almost becomes like, I remember you saying, Mac, it's almost becomes not enjoyable to tell a story. You'd rather just keep it to yourself. It's kind of like you start telling what really happens over there, people either start looking at you differently, or you kind of like, they're like looking at you almost like maybe you've got some issues going on. You're like, well, I'm just telling you what it's like over there. I'm just telling you how the other side of the world looks at little girls. Like, you want to know what it's like over there? This is what it's like. You know, when we medevac a little girl because she got shot in her hand, and then we finally figure out why she got shot in her hand. Well, it was because she blocked the bullet when they aimed for her face. That's why she got shot in the hand. It's like, what? You're like, no, that really happened. Yeah. So, but when you have your brothers that you can share things to your left and to your right, there's a support structure that you don't need to have medication. You don't need to cover or hide things because you feel supported. And I think that's what the POWs feel like. They have a tight bond that I'm sure that the stories and experiences that they have, they can only share with their brothers, but they feel at the same time, they feel very supported. So, yeah, I think there's a large component to non-medicated therapy because you feel like you have a tight-knit bond. Now, with a small group of you.
I've got another email for you. Mac, this is a pretty hard question, and I've had it in my head for a while, and listening to both Josh and Ken Falk kind of made me want to ask you, but if you don't want to answer it, I'll understand. Are we creating victims by virtue of so much attention focused on PTSD? And I'll draw a parallel to kids. When your kid falls down or stumbles, they get up and they look at you. And I think that a parent's reaction to that little bit of trauma defines the way a kid reacts. So if I get on my knees and go, "Oh, poopsie, are you okay?" Immediately the waterworks get going. And my kid becomes hysterical. If I look at him and say, "Hey, get out of here before I get mad at you," he runs away and he doesn't think anything of it. By virtue of the way that we treat and consider PTSD, are we creating more victims? Rob?
Well, I think that's a tough question, but I think in cases we are. An example of when I was going to horseshoeing school, there was a Navy corpsman in the class with me, and he would walk right up to you. He walked up to my wife when he met her, said, "Hey, I'm, you know, fill in the blank name. I went to Iraq, and now I'm nuts." I mean, literally, that's what he said when he first met her. I'm like, Jesus. And he, if the system didn't, I mean, he basically milks the system. He lives in Helena near the hospital, and, you know, he looks at my boots and goes, "Hey, are those Kennetrek boots?" I said, "Yeah, you know, and they're a $400 pair of boots." And he goes, "I get mine from the VA." I'm like, "Are you kidding me?" And, I mean, and he has really no physical ailment. It's all in his head. But he's milking that system for as much as he can get. And there are those cases, but the problem then becomes, you know, we do need that. People do need that and do warrant that treatment and that benefit, that service. But there's always going to be some guys out there that do abuse it. I mean, and I think that's what drew me to Josh and Ken's program is they're kind of harsh when they do their screening on who comes to their retreat. You know, like they said, if you've been to 15 of these before, you know, you're probably not the guy that we want. So that's what kind of attracted me was their screening to it and finding the guys that really do need the help and don't just need a handout.
Rudy, your thoughts?
It's I think having a very specific screen because when we all went through the VA process, they're kind of like, "Are you sure you don't have PTSD? Are you sure are you having this and this?" And I know, I'll tell you that I know I don't have it, but I have stresses that have, because of my experiences in the Marine Corps, that I feel there's two large things that get me through in a very positive way. Obviously, one, support of family, and I will say, and friends, right? So, like I said, when you've got a small group of guys that you've kind of got your, what I call my stovepipes, right? I've got my Marine Corps brothers, I've got my neighborhood friends, and I've got my lifelong friends. Well, when you can reach out to your Marine Corps brothers and just maybe throw a jab or something, I think there's a big component to your mental happiness. And my other component is the fact that I'm able to teach back to young kids, and I feel like I'm giving back to kids in a way of coaching. Well, I will say
the problem is you got some guys that are very strong-willed, and Rob tells a story of, you know, at first he was, I don't have PTSD, and then you start peeling it back, and the VA actually finds out that maybe you do. And so let's just kind of peel this onion back and break down the barrier a little bit and dive in, because there's actually people that maybe do have some things going on inside that is hidden and covered, or they're trying to compartmentalize it. But the problem is, when you compartmentalize things like that, it tends to simmer like a volcano, and you don't know when it's going to erupt. And Matt, you commonly use the black blood can come out.
Hello.
Well, you know, I will say the problem is sometimes I look at PTSD is, you know, that those 6 ball bearings that hang on a string that people put on their desk, and they launch one ball bearing, and it goes click, 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 click. It goes back and forth. And I think what happens sometimes in situations like this with the PTSD is the government is trying to find balance, and those ball bearings are clicking back and forth, and they're trying to figure out where's their left and right limits and trying to diagnose people appropriately. Well, some people, as that thing's going back and forth, to be honest with you, I think are taking advantage of the system. But there's also guys like Rob who said, I don't have it. And you're like, look, I think we need to look a little deeper, because if you're not sleeping well and you're thinking about it, and maybe you're having some anger management issues, and I'm not somebody that – I know people get sensitive about what you say, the word anger management, or maybe you're just having – you're quick to temper than you ever were. We probably need to look at some things that are you're internalizing and compartmentalizing that you need to – probably either have some therapy or somebody or some, you know, some groups that you can talk to. And I'm not talking medication. I'm just talking some ability to talk to some people, right, whether it's professional therapists or, you know, maybe it's like a retreat like Rob's talking about, or, you know, a hunting trip. And then what ends up happening is you end up networking and building bonds and friendships with people that have shared experiences when you go on to those type of things. So it's delicate, to be honest with you. It's delicate about how people are raising a hand on PTSD. Some people aren't raising a hand because they don't feel like they have it, and maybe they do. You know, I know that I don't, you know, me personally, I know what's driving me in a positive way in life. It's helping me, no doubt, on having a very positive aperture. And I go back to it's friends and family, in my ability to teach back with coaching. And so I think that feeling of helping other kids is helping me know that I'm giving back. And I really get a lot of enjoyment out of it just personally. And you don't need to pay me for it. I don't need any kind of compensation. I'm already getting my payment just in my mental satisfaction of doing it and feeling good about myself. But I think a large component is friends and family. You know, people feel isolated and alone. You know, there's a common phrase that idle hands are the devil's workshop. You know what I mean? It's like when you're not busy, if you're not up there, you know, making targets and hunting and tracking and doing something, it's like what else would you be doing to make yourself happy? You know what I mean? It's like you got to find that. If you're not Craig Corsi, who's up, you know, opening up his own ranch and going out hunting and tracking, it's like, what would Craig be doing? You know what I mean? It's like, don't let those idle hands become the devil's workshop. Don't let your loneliness become the devil's workshop, and find something that makes you happy. And you don't need medication to do that. You need friends. You need brothers. You need to kind of find what's going to make your clock tick. You know what I mean? So I think when I'm lonely and bored is when I'm the most depressed. So. And I don't have PTSD. Now you start compartmentalizing stuff that's happened to you in the past, then that's just going to fuel that fire. That, like you said, Mac, the black blood will start boiling. So,
not that I've ever seen you display that behavior. But you know what? I'll tell you what. It's a troublesome question, and I do think, just like when a little kid falls down, I think the example is a good one. You know, I mean, I used to yell at my sons, did you just break the driveway? What? Get your ass out of here. And boom, they take off running. They're not crying, right? They should be, but they're not, right? Or when you go, oh, buddy, right? So are the problems real? Yeah, you know, what you experience is is tough. But I will tell you this, man. I mean, my sister was in a house when both of her sons were shot in the head and killed. And her husband blew his brains out. So nobody I know has been through that other than my sister. It's the most horrific thing I've ever heard of. So that, I think about that, and I think about, and she's still alive. And I think about guys who fought in World War II. That was not an easy event. I mean, they didn't go for 7 months, okay? They went for the duration, and they stayed. And for the guys who fought, it was unpleasant, day-on, stay-on business. And they came home, and they didn't have all of this support. And I know that I'm sure there were guys who killed themselves, who took their own lives, and who weren't right in the head anymore. But I think what the majority of them had to do was join the VFW so they could be around guys that were like them, and they had to get on with their lives because there was no other option. So I do think, as Rob said, they're, you know, kind of a little cottage industry, and that's one of the things I do like about Boulder Crest is they means test that. Yeah, you've been through too many of these, but I think that it is a little bit of a kind of like a poke in the chest. Hey, the World War II guys, they came back, they went on, they did great things. They went on to the great
thing. Yeah, but I would say, though, and I think it was Steve Seeker was saying that his grandfather was, you know, heavy alcoholic, fought, you know, D-Day, Normandy.
Right.
My grandfather, undiagnosed, but I would say he died at 58, Iwo Jima, machine gunner, you know, heavy drinker, heavy smoker. You know, people say, well, that was just kind of the times, and they didn't know the health risks. Well, I'd also say that guy was probably dealing with a lot of PTSD issues after fighting on Iwo Jima that essentially haunted him probably for the next 30 years until essentially, you know, his body just gave out after, you know, essentially, and it's hard for me to say it out loud, but abusing your body with chemical substances such as alcohol and you know, smoking. So, it's like I said, it's hard when you don't feel like you have someone that you can talk to. Those guys back then, I don't think they felt like they had a place to go, somewhere they could talk to. I think we're better about that now. I think these retreats and these camps, and I think they're fantastic in that regards because they're going to network, they're going to get people feeling like they have someone that they can relate to and talk to. And that's why I'm a huge believer in these things. I love that they're vetting. It's like, you know, it's kind of like we talked about earlier where people with PTSD, it's one thing for the VA to diagnose you that you have PTSD, but let's talk about guys that have really been in some stuff that for you to come to here, we need to make sure that you're what we consider to have some justification to come to this place. And I think that's fantastic to have some vetting of who's going to go. So, yeah.
All right. All right. Plans for the weekend. Rob, what are you doing up in Montana?
Well, I'm going to a massage therapist this afternoon.
What?
Promptly followed by the chiropractor.
Yeah,
horseshoeing beat you up pretty bad. I had
Right. Trying to throw the chiropractor in just to legitimize it. Well played, Maurer.
I'm on the second CAT scan for pain generating at the base of my neck and running up into my ear and into my forehead.
Right.
And I was back in Idaho shoeing, had a big day. Said, man, I better go to the chiropractor. And I went and I told him about this pain in my neck that the VA and then a private doctor here in Montana has been looking at. And he said, man, it's probably your neck. It's probably out. So he starts poking around in there and hit I think it was the C4. And I said, man, that hurts. And he adjusted me, and it's starting to go away. So then I picked up with a chiropractor here in Montana, and she said, well, you need to train your muscles, so you got to go see a massage therapist. And I was like, oh, cool, that'll be fun. She said, no, this is not going to be fun at all. She said, it'll make you cuss a lot. Mm-hmm. So I get that. I got that at 13:30 today.
Oh, man. It's like if you have deep tissue, those things just hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, my God.
The chiropractor goes, and she's got a great tool that really gets in there deep. And I'm like, oh, man, this sounds like it's going to suck. And then she goes, well, then I want to see you right after that. Because the theory being, you know, the massage therapist loosens the muscles and the chiropractor is more easily able to adjust the bone structure. So I got that going. Not looking forward to it.
All right. Wow. On that positive note, Rudy, what do you got going?
So I think you might actually dig this, Mac. Tomorrow I'm teaching the girls. I'm bringing my – when I say 2002, that's their age group. So think of 14-, 15-year-old girls, bringing them in to teach them about the OODA loop for about an hour and a half. We're going to talk about the OODA loop and talk about –
oh, my God.
Yeah. I think you're going to appreciate this.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, decision-making.
Let me know how that goes for you.
Well, and I'm also, to be honest with you, I picked up a second competitive team, and these are 08 girls. So think of, like, now we're talking first and second graders, and I'm instilling a mentorship program with my 02s. So my 02s will mentor they're going to mentor the young ones. And so we're going to brief them on that tomorrow, too. I'm going to talk to them about what I'm expecting from them as mentors and how we're going to introduce them. And, you know, just some Marine Corps style. So I'm getting some positive influences, man, from you. Like, what can I do to you know, build a bond with these girls and start getting them to teach back? Because I'm getting involved with this thing that's called three-dimensional coaching. So if you look at the way coaches...
It's right up your alley, Rudy.
It is. So it's all three dimensions. I can give you the whole breakdown if you want it, but I don't think you'd want it.
We're out of time today, but
all right.
No, another time. I mean, by all means, we'll come on and talk about it. So because
it's great. I think it's good for even three-dimensional coaching. It's just good for business in general. How do you lead people in a three dimension? So I'll give you the whole deal.
Sounds like a segment to me. All right.
Okay.
All right, guys, first of all, want to thank you for coming on and pinch hitting for the Gunner. We didn't even have a chance to talk politics, man. What's up with that?
No, I was kind of wondering what you thought about the Harvard thing.
Well, why do you offer him the job? Why do you publicize that he'd been offered the job to have him turn you down in public? It looks stupid. Like, I don't know who the chief of staff is of that whole thing. But get your shit together, man. First of all, you call Harwood and say, hey, we're about to consider you to be the nominee. If you're selected, will you serve? I'd have to think about it. Okay, look, we're going to put this on hold. You need to get back to me within the next 24 hours before we do anything further because we're not going to embarrass the president. It looks stupid. I don't know. Your thoughts.
Exactly. Yeah. No, you kind of would figure they had that worked out behind
the scenes.
Yeah,
what the shit?
Howard, talk to your wife.
He had the whole vetting process at the Trump Tower with always he's bringing people in, interviewing them, blah, blah, blah. That seemed like that was pretty good. All of a sudden now we're just, you know, kind of firing from the hip. Like,
I don't get it. It's not like this is the first time we've ever done this, you know. So call Harwood, ask him if he'll accept the position. And if he says no or you have to think about it, then he's probably not our guy. So
that's right.
We'll move on. But, to have it come out that the president offers him the job and he turns it down, you know, in a president that is struggling to get on his feet, you know, it just doesn't help, you know. So it's like, come on, boys, get your shit together. Whoever doing this with his staff. So anyway,
I agree.
What did you think about? What did you each think about Flynn leaving? Good or bad?
I think that's the best thing that, of all his appointments. You know, that was the payback position Flynn got in the first place for running his mouth for the entire campaign, you know, being that one military general that was pulling for Trump, you know, that was his payback job. And it couldn't have gone better, I don't think, that he got freaking ousted within 3 weeks. I mean, that had to be the shortest tenure of the NSA that has ever been. But I think it's good for the country.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan. Rudy, your thoughts?
I think I couldn't agree with Rob more. I think it sets a tone, like he's not going to tolerate it. And you look at some past administrations, I mean, they'll kind of kick that thing down the road and, you know, also you have to do multiple investigations. I mean, he just walked in and said, you're out. You know, literally, you're fired to pack your stuff. I can't have this. I'm not going to have this type of stuff on my staff. Now, the problem is he's got to build a team that gets in sync. It seems like he's got a bunch of he's got a bunch of small teams that doesn't seem to be like they all want to play together. So
well, you know, to me,
playing different sports.
To me, the White House team is the one that's asked up.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Look, you look over at DOD, that thing's pretty well locked down.
It's right? locked down.
You look over the.
Mattis has got it wired in tight. Yeah, I would say that my concern is, and is from what I understand, he's got his like public affairs and his communication team is the one that just can't seem to get in sync, and he doesn't have a director, and it's like that's to me is almost your highest priority right now. He's got to make a good image to the public.
What about? You know, did you watch the press conference? What'd you think, Rob?
I did not watch it.
Rudy, did you watch it?
No, I had to work.
It was a cage match, man. Yeah.
Was it?
Really? Oh, yeah. All comers, man. Had the chair and the whip and the whole thing. And and you see him. Part of it kind of crazy, but part of it you say, you know, he's right. They don't cover it fair. And he just lets them have it. You know, at one point he says, and maybe the line of the press conference, he says, it was something about CNN or something, and he says, by the way, he said, not calling it fake news anymore. And then, like, 1001, 1000 news, two. Then he says, very fake news. And with that, everybody starts laughing. So, anyway. All right, boys. Have a good weekend. Thanks for the visit.
See you guys.
All right. You too, Mac.
All right. Take care. That is up in Montana, Rob Schwarz. And here in Southern California, Kurt Rudy Knowles. Yeah, Rudy is call sign. But Battle Buddies from Afghanistan, smart guys, good guys, and happy to have them on any time that they'll come on. So, the Gunner, out and about today. My thanks to Kim Holmes for coming on talking about Italian food. My thanks to Richard Caruso for coming on and talking about his life and his experience as a whistleblower. His experience as a in the entertainment business, and the rest of the story, if you will. So, very cool stuff. Very cool stuff. So, my thanks to him for coming on. And let's see. Most of all, as always, my thanks to you for listening on a Friday. Have a great weekend. What are we doing on Monday? Justin Constantine going to join us on Monday, I think. And we're going to talk China on Monday. Grant Newsham's going to join us. He's a former Marine and writes on China, works over there, and so be interesting about we'll talk about the Spratly Islands and in general what we should expect how that dance is going to go. So Monday will be an interesting program. So very cool. And then next week I'm going to get a chance to interview a Medal of Honor winner. Yeah, Colonel Barney Barnum. Coming up. So that'll be on Wednesday. So pretty exciting stuff. So we continue. Anyway, my thanks to you for listening. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Tell your friends. Armoring Radio with a Thud. Have a great weekend. Out.